Welcome to today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is my colleague, Joe Healy. And we are here today to talk about regionals. It is time to preview regionals as everything is set to get underway on Friday. Well, as long as you don't, you're not watching the Coral Gables regional. We'll have more on that in a minute. But yeah, regionals are upon us, Joe. It's, we've had the week to digest the field, and now it's time to finally get into this and get the 2022 NCAA tournament started.
Yeah, it's this week is always, well, it's busy, so it goes by quickly. I mean, you and I have been feverishly trying to preview these things in print, and we've done some other things here and there, and I know this week is also busy for people pinging us, asking us for information, which is I don't mind doing for other journalists and radio shows and podcasts and all that kind of stuff. So there's all of that, so it ends up being a busy week. But this week is also difficult in that we don't have anything until so it seems like from Selection Monday until the games start on Friday, it's just like an interminably long wait, even though it's only 3 or 4 days. But yeah, it is upon us. It should be a fun weekend. It's always full of surprises. Never has a regional weekend passed where we kind of shrug our shoulders and go like, well, it was what it was. Like, there is always something that's going to jump up and surprise us, and that's the beauty of it.
Indeed. And there's other things happening around college baseball. We had coaching change Baylor and Clemson both have had coaching openings get created as Steve Rodriguez stepped down from Baylor on Monday, and Monty Lee was fired by Clemson on Tuesday. The transfer portal is heating up, and just this morning, as we record this on Thursday, Tommy White from NC State, ACC Freshman of the Year, Tommy Tanks, has entered the portal. We will see where he ends up. And we'll see where Baylor and Clemson land on coaches as well. A lot to get to with all of that, but today we are going to stay focused on regionals as the NCAA tournament is really what this whole thing is about. Okay, Joe, so let's just start at the top here. Let's start in Knoxville, where you have Tennessee, obviously as the number one seed in the whole tournament. They are in a draw with Georgia Tech, Campbell, and Alabama State. As draws go for the number one overall seed, I mean, you could make a case this is somewhat difficult for them. I wouldn't make that case, but Georgia Tech is, capable of bashing right there with Tennessee. And Campbell has some really high-end talent, but I don't think anyone's keeping up with the Vols this weekend.
I wouldn't think so either. I mean, I think it's tougher than what you would maybe expect with the number one overall seed. I guess I'll put it this way. There are softer regionals out there than this one. So if you're a believer that the number one overall seed should have the softest regional, which is not a right, that's never been, written out. It sometimes works out that way, but that is not a right of the top overall seed. So it's tough in that. Yeah. Georgia Tech can hit with them. Campbell is tough. Obviously they've got two, maybe first round picks, certainly two very high picks regardless, shortstop Zach Neto and then Thomas Harrington on the mound. And the good news for them is that, Harrington obviously is going to have to go against Georgia Tech, so they're not going to have to deal with Harrington, at least in a traditional, like starting the regional sense. Maybe they circle him back around if they get to Monday or something in a relief role or what have you. But regardless, a couple of tough teams there, but yeah, with the way the regional shakes out, they avoid some of the danger there. I like Tennessee here. Georgia Tech is just so one-sided as a team. I don't know how much they're going to have for Tennessee if they get back to a regional final on Sunday. And, Tennessee has a surplus of arms, and Georgia Tech struggles to find primary arms, much less secondary and tertiary. And so I think that's a real concern in this regional for them.
Yeah. I don't think either Campbell or Georgia Tech have the arms that would be required to even push Tennessee when they come out of the loser's bracket. And if by some weird way Tennessee falls into the loser's bracket, obviously no one has more pitching than they do. So I feel pretty good about Tennessee here. The number one overall seed hasn't won since 99. But I don't think regionals weekend is where you have to worry about the slip up if you're the Vols. All right, let's move it out west. Stanford is your number two overall seed. They have Texas State, UCSB, and Binghamton. Kind of a weird one that Texas State got sent to Stanford with multiple regionals, like in the Texas Midwestern area. I assumed they would have stayed closer to home, but they don't. They're getting shipped out west. And again, I don't see any trouble here for Stanford, but I do think Texas State and UCSB are intriguing, and they might push Stanford a little more than what we were talking about Georgia Tech and Campbell being able to push Tennessee.
Yeah, it's weird on a couple of fronts with the teams they have out there. With, you know, Texas State on one front, yes, like they could have gone to Austin and like walked there basically. Now you never know how the puzzle fits. We're not in the committee room, so like there are factors, you know, that go into that. But so they're getting shipped out that way. It also means that Gonzaga is not there, so Gonzaga ends up all the way across the country in Blacksburg. So just kind of weird on two fronts. This is where Texas State ended up, but you're right in that I think this one could be tricky. I still like, obviously, I think Stanford's okay here, but you know, Texas State and UCSB are the two most dominant, I guess, unless you want to throw Davidson in there in the A-10, but the two most dominant conference champions from non-power conferences this year. You know, they both really just ran through their leagues, and both Sunbelt obviously was a pretty good league this year. And, you know, the Big West was not. We've talked about that a million times, but man, 27-3, I don't care what league you're in. And we know they're talented. And frankly, you know, Santa Barbara's probably a two just because the Big West is not particularly good this year. Their RPI was in a place where it was hard for them to be a two. So really, I mean, that's a regional, I think, that has two seeds with Texas State and Santa Barbara. It's just kind of a coin flip there. So could be tricky for Stanford, but with the way Stanford's playing right now, I don't have too much concern about them.
Yeah, I kind of thought that they should have pushed UCSB up to the two line, and then this regional could have had UCSB and San Diego both. There are twos with similar resumes to UCSB, but their RPI is what it is. So, yeah, but the fact that Stanford doesn't have to face Corey Lewis, I think, is the big key here, and I expect the Cardinal to roll pretty easily. Okay, so moving on to the number three overall seed. That is Oregon State in Corvallis. They also have Vanderbilt, San Diego, and New Mexico State. You mentioned Gonzaga not getting sent to Stanford, and they did get sent there, nor did they get sent here. I thought Gonzaga would have been locked in to Corvallis. Instead, they send the other WCC team, that's San Diego, to Corvallis. Vanderbilt is an intriguing two seed. I don't super duper know what to make of Vanderbilt. Certainly, at times we've thought they've been really good this year. At times they've looked pretty terrible. This is an intriguing 2-3 game there with UCSD and Vanderbilt on Friday.
Yeah, I'd believe anything in terms of what Vanderbilt does here. From, I mean, really. 0-2. I mean, that would be, you know, I'd be surprised by that, but you know, if you told me it happened, like, you know, I guess I'd believe you with how up and down they've been this season. And I'd believe they sweep through this thing because they're that talented. But I think you're right to really latch on to that 2-3 matchup being interesting. I mean, I've not seen an official rotation for San Diego, but I have to assume they're going to throw Bryson Motz, and that guy's good. 124 strikeouts this season and 83 2/3 innings. He can pitch, and San Diego generally can pitch. They've got some good bullpen arms. Like, they're going to be able to throw the kitchen sink at Vandy in game one. And, you know, and we know, especially with the struggles Vandy has had this season and the up and down nature, that if they get loser's bracket, that's going to be tough. So that is a massive, massive game in this regional, and sets up well for Oregon State for maybe those two teams to have to beat up on each other a little bit to win that game. And then, of course, being able to save Jerpy for that second game is just huge. So there's an opportunity here for Oregon State to really be sitting pretty after day one of the regional. And that might be required because Vanderbilt is talented enough that I don't think you really want to mess around in this regional and give them an opportunity.
So they're actually not saving Jerpy. They're going to throw Jerpy against the Mexico State.
Okay, fair enough. I anticipated they would, but yeah, it surprises me.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think the whole, like, save your ace bit is way overblown. If you're a team like Oregon State, you need to just win, period. Like, you don't, you save your ace when you need to do something. Like, if you're running out Jerpy, Kmatz, and Fennigs, like, you should just be confident that those three guys are going to win you a regional, and it really doesn't matter. I feel like saving Jerpy would actually be like a sign of weakness if you're Oregon State, and maybe that's dumb. Maybe you should just save Jerpy and go with it. But I like the show of faith in Kmatz to say that he's going to start game two. I think Vanderbilt, though, has to beat San Diego if they're going to win this regional. I don't think they can get off schedule. They need Holton to beat San Diego. You know, they have Fittrell, they have McIlvain behind him still, but I just would not want to roll into a loser's bracket. You can't afford that if you're Vanderbilt. I think they have to stay as on schedule as they possibly can. All right, moving on. We've got number 4 seed Virginia Tech. Joe, you're going to be in Blacksburg for this one. It's an intriguing one, as you got Virginia Tech, Gonzaga, Columbia, and Wright State. Again, a little bit strange that Gonzaga's going across the country, but I love the contrast in styles. Virginia Tech has, you know, one of the best offenses in the country. They're going to be out there with the big hammer for all their home runs, and Gonzaga, which is one of the better pitching staffs in the country. So, two very contrasting styles here from the top two seeds in this regional.
Yeah, and you talk about teams, you know, like Oregon State. You talk about teams that should just have confidence kind of with what they have, and that's Gonzaga. I mean, Gabriel Hughes is the big name there. He's the Team USA guy. He's, you know, they're going to be the high draft pick, all that stuff. But, you know, they go deep with, you know Vreeling and Kempner when Kempner's been healthy this season, and some good bullpen pieces, and Owen Wild. I mean, they have enough arms to get through this thing. Now, the trick is going to be obviously slowing down the Virginia Tech offense, but I do like Gonzaga as a really tricky two seed here, because the other factor is, look, there's a lot of pressure built in when you have teams that are hosting for the first time or for the first time in a long time. And I think Virginia Tech qualifies going back to 2013 when they hosted, and they struggled when they hosted in 2013, frankly. So this is a different team. This is obviously a much better team than that 2013 team. But there is kind of some inherent pressure in that first time hosting situation. And Gonzaga is a team that's pretty unflappable, kind of feels like they're a team that's ready for whatever. We saw that with the way they played Oklahoma State on the road earlier this season. They've got the pitching talent to get it done. But it is a couple teams that feel like they have to kind of stay with what they do here. I mean, Gonzaga cannot afford to get into slugfest with not just Virginia Tech, but like Columbia can swing it pretty well. It's hard to know what to expect with Columbia because they've been in the Ivy League for the latter half of the season. And so the competition level is what it is. But, you know, Gonzaga is not going to be able to win slugfests. They just don't win games that way. That's not what they want to do. They want to stay on schedule with pitching. I think they've got an opportunity to do that until they run into Virginia Tech in the latter half of the weekend. And they'd still have the pitching to do it in that situation. It just gets so much harder when you're talking about Sunday versus, you know, even a winner's bracket game on Saturday. Wright State is a tricky four, not as tricky as they were last year. That team just lost so much talent from last year when they were the best four seed in the entire field. However, this is a program that expects to win in situations like this. And when it comes to four seeds, that kind of belief goes a long way, because there are four seeds, even though every team will tell you that they're not just happy to be there. There are four seeds, I will tell you, that are just kind of happy to be there. Wright State is never going to be that four seed. They want to win. They play a tough schedule every year. They won a game against Virginia Tech in a series early this season, so this is not going to be new for them. So Virginia Tech, you know, if they play their game, they'll be fine. But it's not a situation where they're just going to be able to waltz in and win on Friday just by playing their C-plus game, probably.
No, I think that's a huge deal that Wright State is going to know that they can beat this Virginia Tech team, because they've already done it. They're the first team this year to beat Virginia Tech. And so it's a big confidence builder for the Raiders. I think you're right not to shortchange Columbia. Well, be very curious to see what they look like, but they certainly played well in the Ivy League. But for me, this all comes down to Virginia Tech and Gonzaga. And I don't know whether Gonzaga should be happy that they got out of Corvallis or not. On the one hand, in Corvallis, they'd be facing a really, really good team, but they would be doing it more on their terms. The weather in Corvallis is supposed to be pretty chilly this weekend, kind of pitching friendly. Here, they're going up, and you just get the contrasting styles. So either the bats are going to be a problem, or because Gonzaga has the arms, they'll have the advantage. I don't know. Well, I'm very interested to see how that one shakes out. All right, let's go to College Station. Texas A&M is the number 5 overall seed. They have TCU, Louisiana, and Oral Roberts. Joe, do you know if there are any coaching ties between any of these schools?
Probably not. No, seems unlikely.
I don't think so, yeah. It is it is an intriguing field here. I mean, you have A&M, you have TCU. TCU, of course, won the Big 12 regular season title. ULL is, I mean, they played very well most of the season. They certainly have played very well down the stretch. The Cajuns are coming in pretty hot. And the Matt Deggs offense is just a difficult one to deal with. So TCU there on that first game is going to have to deal with the ultra aggressive Cajuns. And, you know, I think a lot of people are just looking forward to a A&M TCU game, the Schloss Bowl, or just the rematch of all of the many TCU A&M games that we've seen over the last decade in the NCAA tournament. But I mean, do not sleep on the Cajuns here, because they really could muck up this whole regional.
Yeah, they're not a comfortable matchup. I mean, the Deggs offense is maybe not quite fully operational yet, but they were a better version of that this year. And Carson Rocaforte, you know, the best player on the team there, has been really good. But that, yeah, they're just not a team you want to see as a three, because they're not going to play you straight up. They're going to do things different from what you normally see. And TCU is also not playing particularly well right now. I mean, they fairly quick exit at the Big 12 tournament and became clear they weren't going to host. And so, yeah, they certainly can't afford to look past the Cajuns, which, you know, for those listening at home, jokes aside, I think people know the Schlossnagel, you know, connection with TCU and A&M, but also Matt Deggs was an assistant at A&M for a while. So, like, there is that more minor connection here. But TCU can't afford to look past that. Obviously, you know, the big matchups that, you know, organizers are certainly hoping for is that A&M TCU matchup, which, in addition to the coaching stuff, they obviously have a lot of postseason history here. That's kind of what they're looking forward to. Has a chance to be pretty offensive regional, I think. A&M's pitching has backslid a little bit from when it was at its peak. There was a time when Nathan Detmer was pitching like one of the best arms in the SEC, and so on and so forth. That has backslid. TCU's not pitching particularly well right now. They've obviously had injury issues, and they're mixing and matching a little bit. And the Cajuns are more of an offensive club than they are a pitching club at this point. That's just kind of what they're going for. So has a chance to see, you have a chance to see a lot of runs scored in this regional, and those types of regionals do tend to have some high variability in who wins them. So this could be a lot of fun.
Jim Schlossnagel only lost 2 home regionals/super regionals in his time at TCU. I do like that advantage for A&M this weekend. Kirk Sarluis will miss game 1 as he continues to serve his suspension from the, the ridiculous ejection that he got against Texas at the end of the Big 12 tournament run for the Frogs. And Matt Deggs has taken a team to Super Regional. So I think that you've got some intriguing experience here, even though none of these teams have a ton of experience. A&M, of course, last year, you know, missed even the SEC tournament. TCU did make regionals, but I feel like has turned over a fair amount of that roster, and they didn't play particularly well in Fort Worth last year anyway. And the Cajuns haven't been to regionals under Deggs before. So, you know, some of that inexperience, I'll be interested to see, but I do like what A&M is bringing out here. Let's go to Coral Gables. where Miami is the number six overall seed. And this one, I mean, we'll break down the teams here. It's Miami, Arizona, Ole Miss, and Canisius. But really, Joe, this is potentially a story of man versus nature.
Yeah, bad news for the Miami. You know, weather looks, I haven't looked at every regional, but weather generally, I mean, it's hot in some places, but that's June for you. The weather looks pretty good in most places, except Coral Gables, where it looks like it's going to be really bad. You know, tropical depression stuff, you know, coming in kind of bad. So if they play it, or, well, they're going to play it. I say if they're playing, like there's any, but, you know, it might get a little moved around, but when they play it, it is going to be fun. Like it's a fun regional where you just don't know what you're going to get from at least the top three seeds, where, you know, Ole Miss is a team, you know, we've kind of documented their ups and downs, but obviously their upside is tremendous. And same thing for Arizona. That's a team that we thought was going to be right there with, you know, right there with Stanford, you know, competing for a Pac-12 title. They weren't that, but here they are. And then of course, Miami's had a really nice season. I mean, those are three teams that at various points of the year thought they could be hosting and or top eights. And here they are all in the same regional. It's just, Miami hasn't hosted well. I think it's been since 2016, and this is the draw they get, which is not the easiest draw. And then you add weather on top of it, which could be a real problem for, I mean, really any of those top three teams, given that the regional getting strung out into extra days means pitching gets extra taxed, and none of those teams really strike me as being super prepared for that. So this one could get really, really wild really, really quickly.
Yeah, I think everyone here, Miami is the deepest on the mound, but I think everyone is going to want to stay on schedule. The Ole Miss of this all is interesting. They are playing pretty well down the stretch. Obviously, they made a quick exit at the SEC tournament, but you know, this is a team that swept LSU and Baton Rouge not very long ago. So you gotta be very careful with the Rebs. And then Arizona, we've certainly talked about on a week-to-week basis, like, what are you going to get from them? But they're really talented. They have seemingly risen to the occasion more often than not this year. It's more when they're playing teams that you feel like, well, okay, like, you definitely should take care of them, that the Wildcats seem to have trouble. So Miami does not get an easy draw here. I would not be surprised to see some sort of upset. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Miami win it either. I think this one just feels totally wide open.
Yeah, I mean, it's, if there were betting lines on this thing, like in a traditional sense, and maybe there are, I just don't know about it. But this one feels like it would be real even across the board for the first three teams in terms of where the money is.
All right, let's go to Stillwater. Oklahoma State is the number seven overall seed. They draw Arkansas, Grand Canyon, and Missouri State. Tricky two here with Arkansas. Don't really know what to expect from them, but tricky two. And obviously, Grand Canyon has some big wins. They've beaten Texas Tech. They've, you know, they have a lot of good wins on the resume. That's why they're an at-large team in the field. And Missouri State can mash. I think you have to look at Oklahoma State here as being the clear favorite, but I also don't think anyone's going to be surprised if the Pokes struggle this weekend.
Yeah, it's one of those deals where you see Arkansas show up in a region. If you're Oklahoma State, you see Arkansas show up in your regional and you kind of like draw in a breath. And then because it's just not a name you want to see pop up in your regional. And I get it. Like, that's a team we assumed would host, even with their RPI problems. We kind of assumed like, they'll get there, right? And they just never did. And I wrote up this regional. It's just been such a weird season for Arkansas, which goes without saying, but they had a lot of guys take steps back. They had some guys not really be impact guys right away if they expected. You know, the SEC put it, their all SEC team is a really tight team. They don't have, some conferences put like 90 million people on their all conference teams. SEC doesn't, but still, Arkansas didn't have a single player on it. It's the only team I previewed for regionals that didn't have a single player on an all conference team. And so I think that kind of shows you, like, just that it hasn't been a standout season, and yet they won a lot of games. And I think that's a skill. We've talked about how that's a skill. So it wouldn't be a surprise to see them make a run here, but like Vanderbilt, I just don't know what to expect. And they're going to have their hands full in game one with Grand Canyon, team that played a tough schedule. on the mound, they're going to see Nick Hull or Daniel Avedia. I'd be a little more nervous about Avedia because that's a pro, not to take anything away from Nick Hull, who's a very nice pitcher, but Avedia's got pro stuff. I mean, he was drafted and he's been really good for them ever since they moved him into the rotation. So that's a tough matchup. You know, Oklahoma State playing pretty well right now. They played well at the Big 12 tournament. It's a team that likes tournaments. You know, they tend to play well at the Big 12 tournament. They've, you know, obviously played well in regionals quite a bit. So it's a team that seems kind of well-conditioned to this kind of thing. So I like them here, just given that I'm not sure what exactly to expect from Arkansas. And what I'll say about Missouri State, if you get into Slugfest, they can beat you. Yeah, the pitching isn't deep. It's not, that doesn't have a lot of high end quality necessarily. Their MVC ERA was over 7, but they can hit home runs. And so if you get into a 14-12 game with them, they're going to like that. So that's where they get dangerous, is if you get into a slugfest with them. Otherwise, I think these teams can handle them.
Do you think any of these teams have enough pitching?
No, that's going to be probably a problem. I mean, I actually kind of like, now it's a different level of competition. I actually like Grand Canyon's depth on the mound. Like, they've got some good bullpen arms that are like guys they can throw 2, 3, 4 innings at a time. So I actually kind of like what they have. It's just a matter of how much does that depth show up in a regional setting where the competition is better than what they see week to week in the WAC. But generally, no. I mean, you know, and we can say that about so many of these regionals. Do you think any of these teams have enough pitching? That's going to be the question of the weekend, I have a feeling.
All right, let's head to Greenville, where East Carolina is the number 8 seed. A lot has been made of, oh, well, East Carolina finally got that top 8 seed. Like, if they don't do it this year, when are they ever going to make it to regionals or to Omaha? And I'm here to tell you that East Carolina got a really tough draw. Virginia, Coastal Carolina, Coppin State round out this regional. Now, Coppin State is probably the worst team in the tournament. So in that way, East Carolina lucks out, but UVA and Coastal as your 2-3, I mean, that is, that's really tough.
No, I agree. Obviously nobody has to sell you and I on the high end ability of Virginia. We were pretty high on them for a lot of the season, and, you know, we're surprised to see the backslide they've dealt with throughout the latter half of the season, but certainly the ability is there for this to be an Omaha team again, especially with that offense. And Coastal's a team that I think is better than I was giving them credit for. Like, you know, I went back when I previewed this regional and kind of looked at them again and was like, man, this team actually really came on stronger than I thought. You know, I forget what the exact record is. I could open up the file where I wrote it up, but I mean, they were like something like 20-5 down the stretch or something insane. They really got going, and they're unique in that a lot of 3 seeds don't have a 1-2 in the rotation like they do, but they've got Reed Van Scooter and Michael Knorr, who have both been really good in the rotation. Not a lot of teams that are 3 seeds can really put together a quality 1-2 like that. So that's unique there. So yeah, I mean, certainly when you're talking about hot teams, nobody's hotter than East Carolina, but Coastal's pretty close. And I think either of those teams could beat East Carolina. And I think one thing that works in East Carolina's favor here, we talk about pitching, is that they're okay kind of just having to throw numbers forward on the pitching staff. Like, we talk about teams having to stay on schedule. Well, East Carolina doesn't have a schedule. They're kind of fine with whatever, you know, they're going to throw their bullpen guys. They're going to use openers. They're going to use 10 guys in a game if they have to. They're okay with all of the above. And I think, you know, generally you don't want to be in that kind of situation. I think they would tell you we'd much rather have Gavin Williams, or I guess in this case, Carson Wisenhunt, you know, having him on the team. They would much rather have that. But given what they've had to do, like, they've found a way to make it work. And in a regional, when your pitching is going to get chewed up, even if you get through this thing, your pitching is probably going to get chewed up at least once. Having that type of pitching staff where they just know they're going to have to mix and match and mess around with stuff, you know, at least they have some experience doing it, whereas a lot of these teams just haven't had to do that a lot this season.
They've got to feel better too, because I'm sure they're going to hold Mayhew for the second game. And, you know, if they get Coastal, you know, yes, Coastal does have a really good 1-2. And obviously, they get Virginia, there's just good pitching to be had. But to know that you would have your ace for that game would probably feel pretty good for the Pirates. You know, I know I said what I said earlier about holding your ace, but in this case, I think that's that is the way to go for sure. It'll be interesting to see what the Pirates have. They have not seen this level of competition super recently. The American did not test them in a way that we are used to seeing it test teams. So what are they going to do against a team like Virginia, a team like Coastal Carolina? It's a bit of an open question. Obviously, East Carolina is playing incredibly well right now, but this is going to be a step up from what they've been seeing for the last 2 months, I would say.
No one has a business like yours with all its strengths and challenges. To succeed, you need a hiring partner that adapts to your needs. You need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring partner that can help you do it all. Find great talent faster through time-saving tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. With Instant Match, over 80% of employees get quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match their job description the moment they sponsor a job, according to Indeed data in the U.S. I'm talking to you about this because I'm a real live Indeed success story. Part of my job at Baseball America as editor-in-chief is to do hiring. And we had an opening for a creative director and a chief technology officer recently. In both of those cases, we posted to Indeed. We found quality candidates and we found the people that we hired through Indeed. And because Indeed made the process so easy, it allowed me to go back to what I prefer to doing and what I've is my main job, which is covering baseball. And we saw with Indeed that the posting process was easy. The evaluation process was easy. Even the process by which we offered someone the job and told everyone else, we're sorry, but we went in a different direction. All easier because of Indeed. And Indeed is the only job site where you only pay for applications that meet your must-have requirements. So start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. That offer's good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. That's Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Terms and conditions apply. Pay per qualified applicant not available for all users. You need to hire. You need Indeed. If you look at it, every day is cause for celebration. You'd celebrate a friend for their promotion, their baby, their wedding, their life thing. You can celebrate yourself for getting a night to sit on a couch and watch a whole lot of baseball. Or maybe you can just celebrate living in 2022, where you can get beer, wine, and spirits delivered from Drizzly in under 60 minutes without ever leaving your couch. Drizzly is the most convenient way to buy beer, wine, and spirits, with delivery to your doorstep in under 60 minutes. Drizzly is the number one app for alcohol delivery. With Drizzly, you get home delivery in under 60 minutes, and you can shop across a variety of stores. Instead of bouncing from store to store looking for what you want at the right price, you can get exactly what you want with Drizzly. Right now, Drizzly is giving all new customers $5 off their first order if they use the code FAST5. That's F-A-S-T number 5. So download the Drizzly app or go to drizzly.com, that's drizly.com, and use the promo code FAST5, that's F-A-S-T number 5, for $5 off your first order. That's $5 off your first order. Just use promo code FAST5 at checkout.
All right, we're halfway through the field, and let's go to the number 9 overall seed. That is Texas, and in Austin, you've got Louisiana Tech, DBU, and Air Force matching up with the Longhorns. It's a tricky four here. One of the harder fours they'll get because Paul Skeens is a legit dude that Air Force is going to throw against Pete Hansen on Friday. But after that, you know, as long as Texas can win that game, DBU and La Tech just don't scare me that much right now. La Tech has won 40 games and finished second in Conference USA, and it's a good team. DBU is confusing, obviously, given how poorly they played in Missouri Valley Conference, but I don't know. What do you make of this draw for the Horns, Joe?
First of all, say hi to Millie for me. But no, I'm kind of with you. Tough four, you know. Air Force has had a really good year. They can swing it. you know, Skeens is a real guy. All that's true. I'm with you though. Like Louisiana Tech is good, but not as good as they were last year. I guess that goes without saying because they're not hosting, but not quite as good as they were last year. Capable, but you know, I'm not sure ready to really win this regional. And then the three seed with DBU, like obviously they're talented, but I think at this point the struggles in Valley play were so profound that, I mean, there were some sweeps in there, I think, but I think they lost a majority of their Valley series. Maybe they won 4 of 7 of them. I don't know, but either way, they weren't very good in Valley play. And that's this entire second half of the season. And so at this point, I think we kind of have to just contend with the fact that they just are what they are. And they just were just kind of an okay team, played pretty well in non-conference and just didn't play well the second half of the season. And so anytime you see Dallas Baptist pop up in a regional, you think that's a capable team, and they are capable. I just don't know if this is the team to get it done, but we'll see. Meanwhile, Texas obviously played well, Big 12 tournament, got to the final. I think crucially, not just they're playing well, I think also crucially, they came out of it feeling, you know, as good as you can feel about their bullpen. Feels like a couple of guys kind of really stepped up there. Tristan Stevens being back in the bullpen, as much as they, I'm sure, would love to have him starting and feeling good about starting and all of that. At the very least, he is a pretty good weapon at the back of the bullpen. He pitched well in Arlington in that role. You know, Hanson and Gordon are throwing the ball well. You know, the lineup will be healthier. There were a couple guys sick, you know, Ivan Melendez, Silas Ardoin, both sick last week at the Big 12 tournament. So maybe a little bit healthier there. They just seem to be playing really well right now. So you combine that with a draw that feels manageable, and I think they're in good shape.
Yeah, and honestly, even if they were to lose to Skeens on Friday, like they have everything they would need to come out of the loser's bracket. DBU just doesn't have pitching. Like, I prepared to be proven wrong this weekend, I suppose, but like they just don't have pitching. And Louisiana Tech, I don't think has the depth. It's a really experienced team. It's a team that knows what a regional is going to look like. But yeah, if I was Texas, I'd feel pretty good about the draw, minus the fact that they have to face a guy who, you know, played for Team USA last year. And, you know, it's hard to evaluate Skeens as a draft prospect because of the, you know, different way that service academies have to deal with that sort of thing. But like, he's a legit dude. And he's maybe the best pitcher on any four seed. So like, that's challenging, but the rest of this, I feel pretty good about for the Horns. So we will see how they handle that. But I think they got a great draw. And frankly, even if you look ahead a week, I think they got a really nice draw with East Carolina as well. I think they can match up pretty well there if that does come to pass. All right, your number 10 overall seed is North Carolina. So let's go to Chapel Hill. UNC, speaking of good draws, this one is a great draw, I would say, as these things go. They have Georgia, VCU, and Hofstra. Georgia certainly has struggled a lot this season. They have a great RPI, and they have some really nice series wins. It certainly is true, but down the stretch, they just did not play particularly well. VCU is going to mash, but I don't think that they have what it takes to win this regional. And Hofstra, their first NCAA tournament appearance. So good on the Pride.
Yeah, shouts to Hofstra. You know, first 30-win season since 2012, first regional ever. I saw in their game notes, they actually got selected for the 1960 NCAA tournament, but because finals were on the day of the game they had to play, they had to take a pass on that. So tough beat for that team. But they'll be making their first actual NCAA tournament appearance. Just, yeah, soft draw for Carolina. And considering they're not a top eight, that's, you know, it's obviously what they're looking for. Georgia's kind of a mostly an RPI two, as I like to call the term. You know, the RPI was just so high that it was kind of inevitable they'd be a two, but not a team playing like a two seed. We've talked about it before, very Jonathan Cannon dependent. You know, they have to get good starts from him. That's where it really, everything begins for them with the injuries they've had this season. VCU, one thing to watch for with them is they do weird stuff on the mound. You know, they have their best pitcher. It's a guy named Campbell Ellis who started 20 games this year because, you know, he'll throw four innings on the weekend and then come back and throw three in the midweek or something. So they do some wonky stuff there on the mound. So it's just kind of an interesting little setup to watch as this weekend unfolds. He obviously, Tyler Locklear is the guy on offense for VCU to watch. It's a pretty decent offense in general. However, he does have over one third of their team's total home runs. So it does strike me as a type of lineup that you just really don't want that one guy to beat you. That's obviously easier said than done, because every team VCU has played this year has had that same strategy, and he had a monster year. So that's how it goes. But yeah, for Carolina, I always have to do the caveat of like anything can happen, but this feels like a very, very winnable regional for Carolina.
If you're Georgia, do you hold Cannon?
I think you have, like, I think that's your only shot. Like, I don't mean to be super down on it, but yeah, I mean, this strikes me as a situation where, like, yes, because I mean, the other thing about it is too, is I think you can pitch this VCU lineup. Like, you just don't let Locklear beat you. Again, easier said than done. But if you're Georgia, like, you're like, yeah, we have SEC arms. Like, maybe they're not the best ones in the SEC, but you know, their best chance to win this regional is for Cannon to face Carolina Saturday night, get to 2-0, and then be ready to really get in some rock fights on Sunday to try to win the regional. Like, to me, that's the path for them.
And I mean, Cannon, after he came back from the injury, wasn't pitching on Fridays anyway. And like, so you could just kind of just say like, we're sticking with what we were doing. Like, I would not throw Cannon on Friday. You're here to win the regional. Like, if that's what we're doing, if we're here to win a regional, I think you have to hold Cannon and just trust that you can beat VCU without him. And if you can't beat VCU without him, like, you're not winning this regional to begin with. So, we spent a lot of time talking about one, you know, what one should hold their ace, but I'm honestly way more interested in the what two, three should hold their ace, because like, that's the only way they're getting out of this thing. All right, let's go to the number 11 overall seed. That is Southern Miss. They are hosting LSU, Kennesaw State, and Army. And we talked about some easy regionals here. This one feels like anything but. LSU certainly would have been capable of hosting a regional. The RPI just didn't quite match up at the end. But this is a team that finished fourth in the SEC. You got Kennesaw State, which has just won a bunch of games and played pretty well down the stretch. And Army as a four, they don't have a Paul Skeens, but this is a team that has been in regionals four straight years. They're not going to be overwhelmed. They have won games every once in a while in that run. So nothing about this feels easy for Southern Miss.
Cleaning something up quickly, I did a quick Twitter search. Jonathan Cannon starting on Friday. So they are going with the traditional route Georgia is. So just cleaning that up from our previous conversation. Well,
there's still time to change it, Scott. That is Strickland, true. If you're listening, and I know you are. Yeah,
if he wants to take our advice on it, and why wouldn't he? But yes, Army, a tough matchup. They're another one of those teams that is just not fun to play. They are another team that likes to run. They like to bunt. They're going to really put pressure on a defense. And that's just, again, like, these teams that play in bigger leagues don't always see a ton of that. And so that can be a particular challenge there. And then of course for Southern Miss, seeing LSU is just oof, because you know, they're obviously very, very good. That team could have easily hosted if a couple of games go a different direction. It's a team that was, you know, top 10 good in the preseason. That was the expectation anyway. So in addition to the fact that their fans are going to buy up every last available ticket in that thing, and you know, they're going to probably, you know, especially in games that don't involve Southern Miss, they are going to take over that stadium. So that's just a tough one for Southern Miss, but creates like really fascinating potential matchup situations when those two teams play each other. Southern Miss is a team that doesn't play in a Power Five, but has Power Five quality pitching and Power Five pitching depth. And so that's a good matchup, interesting matchup against LSU's offense, which of course can really, really mash. And I don't want to sell LSU's pitching staff short. It's not a traditional pitching staff, so I think sometimes we forget about it, but they've done some interesting things with their bullpen and have found some bullpen guys along the way. So they're not the weak sisters of the poor in terms of what they're trying to do on the mound, even if it just looks a little different from what you're used to.
Yeah, definitely contrast in styles here, as Southern Miss is all about the arms and LSU is going to be more about the bats. But yes, do not sell LSU short on the mound. They've done some incredible things. Starting the year, there were a lot of questions about what LSU was going to be on the mound. the end of the second half of SEC play. They've really cleaned a lot of that up. They're not the deepest group, but it's a group that is going to be tough to beat this weekend. All right, let's go to Louisville. Number 12 seed Cardinals welcome in Oregon, Michigan, and Southeast Missouri State. And Joe, we've talked about how several regionals are going to be pretty offensive. This one might be the most offensive regional out there. Louisville, obviously, is one of the top offenses in the country. Oregon is certainly more on the hitting end than on the pitching end. Michigan is their pitching staff is definitely not vintage Michigan. Like, it's not the staff that you saw in 2019. They're definitely about the offense. There are going to be some runs scored this weekend in Louisville.
Yeah. I mean, in a four seed SEMO, 95 home runs on the year. Like, there are going to be some hacks in Louisville. You know, it's a combination of teams with good offenses and some pitching issues that are going to compound that situation. It might be some ugly long games in Louisville. And I think by the time we get to Sunday night or Monday, whenever this thing ends, I think it's going to be which team survived this thing as opposed to which team really took this thing, because I think that's going to what it's going to kind of look like. And some of that is just because we're kind of conditioned to not look at games that are won 13 to 10 as a team really controlling the game. We tend to look at that from like a pitching standpoint, but maybe that's a little bit unfair, but I think that's going to be the way this thing is perceived. Cause I think the most surprising outcome of this thing, more so than any one team winning it, except I guess SEMO, the most surprising outcome here would just be one team just really pitching this thing and winning the regional, because I have an extremely hard time seeing any scenario where that's the case.
If it does happen, it's going to be Louisville. Jared Poland is a really good guy to have at the front of your rotation, and they have other trusted arms that they can throw out there. But I just think with the offenses that they're going to be dealing with Oregon and Michigan and SEMO, to your point, with all of its home runs, I think it's going to be hard even for the Louisville pitching staff to take control of this regional. The ball this time of year at Jim Patterson Stadium flies anyway, and then you throw in the fact that all four of these teams can swing the bats really well, and this definitely just has super offensive weekend written all over it. All right, moving on to Gainesville. Number 13 seed Florida is hosting, and we talked about the weather being a problem in Miami. There's a chance, I guess, that the tropical depression pushes far enough north that it's also a problem in Gainesville, but it seems like right now the forecast is that Gainesville will not be Rainsville this weekend, so we'll see if that holds. This is a pretty wide open regional for me, one of the tougher draws out there. Florida welcomes in Oklahoma, Liberty, and Central Michigan. If Paul Skeens isn't the best pitcher that a four seed has to throw out there, Andrew Taylor is. Central Michigan, very experienced as well. They played in a regional final a year ago, and they upset Miami and Starkville in 2019. So that's it's a team that knows what it's doing in the tournament. Oklahoma should be hosting, as I said, on Monday. And then Liberty is a team that already has a series win in Gainesville this year. So they're certainly going to be confident going back down there. I could see this going any number of ways.
Agreed. I think this is the regional that I'm most fascinated to see how it plays out. Because there are truly three teams that I would not be surprised at all if they won it. And even Central Michigan, just with how successful that program has been the last several years, like even that would not be the most shocking thing that's ever happened, especially if Andrew Taylor just goes out and really, you know, shoves it against Florida to set them up well the rest of the weekend. So yeah, it feels pretty open here. Obviously Florida being a little bit inconsistent this season, which I guess is being kind to put it that way, like being inconsistent as they've been is adds to the fact that it feels a little bit wide open. Oklahoma playing as well as it has lately is adding to that. And one wrinkle of Oklahoma is we've kind of bagged on their pitching this year. And I think that's totally fair, but I think, you know, what you saw last weekend in Arlington is that what you're seeing there with Oklahoma is less that the arms are not good and more that they are just, they're just inconsistent. So last weekend, you had a situation where Jake Bennett was really good and Trevin Michael out of the bullpen was really good and pitched in, I think, literally every game. David Sandlin was really good. They got, you know, some good stuff from Cade Horton in the championship game, so on and so forth. And so when those guys all pitch well, that's what you get. When some subset of those guys don't pitch well, you get something less than that. And Oklahoma's offense has been good enough the second half of the year to make up for that. But this is a team that when they're also getting the pitching on track and they have a good week or weekend throwing the ball, I mean, yeah, they're obviously a team deserving of a host, and they're a team, frankly, that could be an Omaha team, but it's just from week to week, you don't know exactly what you're going to get on that side of the ball.
They strike me as a team that really needs to stay on schedule. I like their front end pitching. I don't want to see what's left behind it, though. You know, Bennett is excellent. Sandlin certainly has the stuff to be really good. And Horton seems like he's coming into his own. And Trevin Michael is an absolute weapon at the back end. But once you get past those four guys, I'm less interested in seeing what the Sooners have. So I think they really need to stay on schedule. Whereas Florida is a team that has a lot of different arms to throw at you, as we saw in the SEC tournament. So I think that, you know, that is a potential difference maker if you're Florida, is that if you show up in a loser's bracket on Sunday, you're still going to feel like, all right, we've got the pitching to finish this out. Oklahoma might not be able to say the same thing. Number 14 overall seed, Auburn. We got Auburn, UCLA, Florida State, and Southeastern Louisiana. If Gainesville isn't the most wide open regional, this one might be for me. UCLA, Florida State as an opener is delicious, and I think that's why ESPN2 grabbed it. That's how you're going to open the whole NCAA tournament there at noon, is Florida State and UCLA. You got to feel good about Auburn on some level, but they're also a team that has been a little inconsistent here. And Florida State has as good a frontline pitching as you're going to see. And UCLA has plenty of overall talent, both on the mound and, you know, at the plate. So this one could go any number of ways for me.
Yeah. And this one feels a little bit like, you know, the photo negative of Gainesville, where in Gainesville, it feels wide open because it's like Oklahoma could just go and take this thing, and Liberty could just go and take this thing. And of course, Florida has played well down the stretch. They could just run through this thing and have no real challenge. This one feels a little different, where this feels like some of these teams have been so up and down this season, particularly UCLA and Florida State. Auburn really has played pretty consistently well this season. It's just that they've been outmanned sometimes. And when they've lost games, that tends to be what it's been. It's not been that they've just thrown things away. It's just that pitching injuries and pitching inconsistency and all that kind of, they get outmanned sometimes. UCLA and Florida State, though, like they have weekends where they just kind of like don't seem to want it, you know, and they just like, here you go. You can take this series. You know, Florida State ran into a buzzsaw late with UNC, but that was an example there where, you know, Florida State was just, you know, they let UNC just kind of take that series from them, and they were in it for the most part. And UCLA has certainly had series like that. So this kind of strikes me as one where there is that potential where the winner here is the one that kind of gets something handed to them. On the other hand, you know, those top three teams have all had moments this season where they've been really, really good. I mean, again, we talk about Florida State being a team that, truly 3 weeks ago, we were talking about pretty seriously as a host, and they fall into a three. UCLA is the same way. If UCLA hadn't had RPI problems, maybe we would have talked about them more as a host. We just saw their RPI problems coming from a mile away, so they never quite got there. So a tough regional draw for Auburn, but man, while I'm pretty confident, just to compare it to Gainesville again, I'm pretty confident in Oklahoma and Liberty, you know, and Central Michigan playing well in that regional to really make a challenge here. Like, I'm going to be fascinated to see like who comes out in this regional really looking like they want it beyond Auburn. Cause I think we know Auburn's going to come out that way. They tend to, but of the other two teams, UCLA and Florida State, like who's going to come out wanting this thing?
Auburn hasn't hosted since 2010. So this is going to be obviously something they're really going to be up for. I am curious what they're going to look like, though, because they played one game last week in Hoover was also just, how's their pitching going to be lined up? Like, obviously, they're going to have everyone rested, but I don't know. That one, again, it just feels open to me. And Southeastern Louisiana certainly is a tricky opener for the Tigers. Moving on, number 15, Maryland, hosting in College Park. Got Wake Forest, UConn, and Long Island. This one stands out to me as Maryland and Wake Forest can absolutely mash. They both rank in the top 10 in the nation in scoring and in the top 5 in the nation in home runs. UConn is not that. UConn is all about its arms. It has a fine offense, but it doesn't hit home runs like that. So is that a good zigzag for UConn? Or is, you know, UConn is also a team that has only played one NCAA tournament team all year. So what are they going to do against the increased level of competition? But can their arms keep Maryland and Wake Forest down, or are Maryland and Wake Forest just going to have too much offense for them this weekend, and this turns into something of a Maryland Wake Forest slugfest at the end?
Yeah, UConn is the rare three. I mean, some of this is you allude to the competition. Like, they just week to week in the Big East, they weren't getting pushed in the way they will this weekend. But, you know, UConn is the rare three where if their pitchers pitch up to the top of their potential, I mean, this can be this regional could be on their arms, you know, like, and other teams may not be able to do anything about it. They're that good on the mound. But again, we just don't know what that's going to look like against better competition than they've seen for at least the last 8 weeks, you know, and longer than that, truly. So that's a variable there. Maryland also, I mean, you and I talked about this offline. They've been a funny team this year where we got really enamored, and rightfully so, with their pitching staff, specifically their starting rotation early in the season. And that has really not necessarily held. They still get good work most of the time from Ramsey and Savakul. But it hasn't been as elite as it was early. And Nick Dean, you know, missed some time, but also just hasn't been as effective the second half of the year. And the bullpen's not as good as it was. And suddenly you look up and Maryland's kind of more of an offensive team than they are a pitching team. However, we know the latent potential is there with this pitching staff. And I think that's a key, that there is an opportunity for Maryland to come out here and really be look like one of the more well-rounded teams in this whole field of 64, if they can get back to capturing the form that we saw from them early in the season. And I feel similarly about Wake Forest. They've just been a tough team to wrap your arms around. Obviously, you like Rhett Lauder at the front of the rotation. You like some of the power they have in the lineup, and you just always wonder how well that power is going to travel. And I guess we're going to learn a little bit something about that this weekend. It should be said, College Park, of course, known as a pretty good hitter's park, just with the dimensions being what they are. So perhaps that makes a situation where Wake Forest just feels a little bit at home in terms of that.
Yeah, I don't think you got to worry about the power traveling this weekend if they were to advance. And, you know, we're talking about them playing Stanford, different story. But Wake Forest has some good arms. You know, it's not just Lauder, who's the ACC Pitcher of the Year. It's also Teddy McGraw and Josh Hartle. They got a good guy at the back of the bullpen, and Minichi. And I like Maryland has arms too. It could end up being it, because of where this regional is, because of when it's being played in June. Like, I expect this to turn offensive, but if you just look at the arms for the top three seeds, it feels like it could be a pretty well-pitched regional. I just assume at some point, though, the bats at Wake Forest and Maryland are going to run into some balls, and that's going to be the difference maker here. And that's unfortunate for UConn, because I just don't think they're going to be able to keep up with that. But we will see. Number 16 overall seed, Georgia Southern, hosting in Statesboro. They've got Notre Dame, Texas Tech, UNC Greensboro. Joe, you said it when they got announced. So you want to host Georgia Southern? Well, try this one out.
Yeah, I mean, it's a two seed in Notre Dame that a lot of people think should have hosted. It's a three seed in Texas Tech that, you know, again, talk about RPI problems. Without RPI problems and a couple more Big 12 wins, like, that team could have hosted. And oh, by the way, like UNC Greensboro, I didn't realize that. I mean, they started like 0-7 in conference play and were like, you know, they were just way underwater this season and really were a lot better in the second half, and they're pretty offensive. Like, given that Georgia Southern is not the most pitching centric team, I think that's putting it mildly. That feels kind of tricky too. There are tougher four seeds in this field, but it is a tough matchup for Georgia Southern. They're going to go up against a team that can swing it a little bit and can put some runs on the board, because I think that could be dangerous for them. So this is one where you talk about betting favorites. Like, I truly think, and some of this is just brand recognition and on Texas Tech's part, some history here, but I mean, if there were odds on the winner of this regional, the host team might be the third betting favorite behind Notre Dame and Texas Tech, because I just think the public would have such a hard time, you know, going against those two teams. And I'm not even here to say they're wrong necessarily, because we talked about the pressure that Virginia Tech might feel. Obviously, Georgia Southern is going to be in that same position. You know, that there is pressure associated with playing at home in these types of situations. And you add on top of that the fact that they've got two really, really good teams coming to town. And I think it's just a tough draw for Georgia Southern. There's no way to put it.
Yeah, this feels kind of similar to Louisiana Tech last year as the number 16 drawing NC State and Alabama. And that was even an easier draw than this. If you look historically, teams seeded 13 through 16 do not do great as home regionals go. And I wouldn't feel great about Georgia Southern here. I don't know whether Notre Dame or Texas Tech is going to be the one that gets it done. Texas Tech away from Lubbock is a bit of a different team. Obviously we know, but I would not feel great about Georgia Southern finding a way out of, Notre Dame has so much experience. Texas Tech has so much experience. Not only has Georgia Southern never hosted, you're talking about a team that hasn't been to regionals in a really long time. They're just, what the experience factor is going to be is definitely going to be in Notre Dame and in Texas Tech's favor. So we shall see how this one turns out. But like I said, I don't feel great about the Eagles this weekend. All right, that is all 16 regions. We ran through them all for you here on today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. Looking forward to a great weekend. We'll have plenty of content over at baseballamerica.com throughout the weekend. And you can follow Joe and me on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy BA. I'll be in College Park. Joe will be in Blacksburg. But we'll have thoughts on everything that's happening around the country as well. We will be back here on the podcast, not on Monday as usual. We'll be here on Tuesday, I would expect, unless like literally every regional wraps up on Sunday night, and they won't all. So we'll probably come back here on Tuesday morning and get as many of these regional results in as we can before we podcast again. So make sure you are subscribed to the Baseball America podcast on your favorite podcasting app, be that Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us, hit that subscribe or follow button, and we will continue coming at you twice a week throughout the postseason. All right, Joe, I think I hit on it all there. I don't think we have any other house cleaning to clean up. We're just excited for the start of regionals. Ultimately, that's the big thing here. So check out all the previews. Joe mentioned we've been writing these previews. They're all over there at baseballamerica.com. And we're ready to get this tournament started. I'm sick of previewing it. I'm ready to actually see it in action. And I'm sure you guys all are as well. So enjoy the weekend of baseball. And we'll talk to you next time here on the Baseball America podcast. For Joe, I'm Teddy. Thanks for listening.